Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 100 Years, 100 Movies. Today is day 15 of the Season of the Witch, and today we're going back in time and talking about horror in the 1960s. Now, horror in the 60s, I've actually talked quite a bit about. I think I've talked about some of the greatest horror movies to come out in that time period. Movies such as Rosemary's Baby, Night of the Living Dead, Psycho, one of my personal favorites, Eyes Without a Face, and other movies such as the Roger Corman, I think I talked about like The Pit and the Pendulum, which was part of a series of Roger Corman movies based on the works of Edgar Allan Poe that also included like The Raven and The Tower of London and a few others. The 60s really kind of give us this interesting dichotomy where we have sort of like horror growing up in a way, like the movies I've mentioned, like Rosemary's Baby, one of the greatest horror movies ever made, by Roman Polanski, Alfred Hitchcock with The Birds and Psycho, just at the top of his game. But we also have like the beginning of like schlocky horror, and also the proliferation of low budget horror with movies such as Carnival of Souls, movies that are just wonderful, all of which, like I mentioned, I've talked about in earlier seasons. The 60s really in general just kind of had this whole this whole transition. A lot of great stuff was happening, and I kind of wanted to focus on certain movies just to kind of show the highbrow and the lowbrow of horror in the 60s, because I think moving forward, and probably in general, there's always been this mix of like high class horror and not so high class horror. But this is where we really kind of start to see this switch. And once again, we start getting this proliferation of horror throughout the world, being shown here in America as well. Like for example, Italian horror starts to really kind of ratchet up in the 60s. In Brazil, we have the Coffin Joe movies, At Midnight I'll Take Your Soul from 1964, and This Night I Will Possess Your Corpse from 1967. And with titles like that, how would you not want to watch a movie about a fucked up rapist who goes around, who's a gravedigger who goes around trying to find a woman that will give birth to his child. Those movies are insane. They are not for the faint of heart, and I think that's something that kind of just gives us an idea of what to expect in the 60s. Now, Psycho, as I've talked about before, was one of the movies that really kind of was a precursor to slashers. But 1960 also gave us another movie that was a precursor to slasher films, and that's Peeping Tom, directed by Michael Powell and starring Carl Baum as Mark Lewis. This movie is super interesting because it does a lot of interesting stuff with movies itself. Peeping Tom revolves around this young man who is, turned on by murdering women. But it's not just the actual murder of the women. He wants to see the how they react to being murdered. Basically, what he ends up doing is he has a video camera and he films them. And as he goes to murder them with a knife hidden in a tripod, he films their deaths, basically, and he makes movies out of it. Which is interesting because this is also a commentary on us watching movies. Mark is basically a voyeur, and he gets his pleasure out of watching women and then killing them. He picks mostly prostitutes, I guess because they won't be missed. And the movie, like the movie itself, starts off with him shooting one of these movies, and he has his camera hidden in his pocket, almost like it's his dirty little secret, and hidden in like a coat. So even him pulling out the tripod is almost like a phallic imagery. And I'm not gonna continue being too highbrow, but basically he watches these women as they're getting ready to do the deed, as they start to undress. And then he kills them, and as he kills them, he continues to record them in their last moments. And it's those images of them in these their last moments in of fear and knowing that they're about to die, in the moments that they're dying, then that is what he's really, really interested in, and not so much in the sex itself. But like I said, this is also a commentary on us as the viewers, because we are being voyeurs, because we are watching somebody kill women and enjoying it to a certain extent. So I guess this movie's smart, but it's also just, it's a meta commentary, and it's a commentary on what we get out of movies. And not that I'm going to go around killing women and that's what I enjoy, because I enjoy horror movies, and not that anyone that enjoys horror movies is looking at it in that way, but it definitely is a different take and an interesting kind of view of the audience and of what we're watching. And I think something that continues to be explored in other movies in the 60s. This is a great movie. It's one of those where there's horror elements in it. And in watching it, I really got like the strong like giallo feel. Like I just feel that this particular movie inspired a lot of giallos, because since we're watching from his point of view, in the sense that we're watching through his camera lens, we don't get to see him actually kill these women. We just see the effects of the murder. And in giallos, as I've talked about, a lot of times all we ever get to see is like a gloved hand. We don't get to see, it's not like a slasher movie. You don't see, you know, Jason goes around stabbing people. We get to see him wielding a knife and killing people. In giallos, we just get to see like a hand with a knife stabbing somebody or something along those lines. And we get something very similar here with Peeping Tom. Peeping Tom is, it's classy horror, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. But it's a great movie and one that's definitely worth checking out. Kind of keeping along these lines of just kind of highbrow horror, I also wanted to talk about, and also international horror, I wanted to talk about the Russian movie V from 1967, which that's V-I-Y, V. In this movie, we follow a group of priests. Chief among them is Koma, who, they're all young priests, and they end up in this remote castle to stay the night. There, an old woman lives there. She begrudgingly lets them in. They each stay in different parts of the house, and Koma himself ends up staying in a barn. And during the night, this old woman chases him around the barn, and when she catches up to him, he jumps on his back and flies off with him on a broom because she's a witch. This is a Russian movie, and it's great. It's got some really cool effects, and it's nuts. So Koma ends up realizing she's a witch, and he takes out a crucifix and negates her power. She falls to the ground, and then he finds a stick and just beats the shit out of her with it. And as he continues to beat her, she ends up converting from an old woman into a young woman. And he kind of leaves her for dead, and he takes off. Now, the crazy thing about this, and one of the things I really enjoy about this particular movie, is that a lot of it is inspired by some of the crazier elements of Russian folklore. Not that there's direct parallels, but there's definitely a lot of some of the ideas that you find in the stories of Koshy the Deathless and like Baba Yaga and some of the other folklore tales of Russia. And if you're not familiar with those characters, Koshy the Deathless and Baba Yaga, I learned about them actually from reading Hellboy comics, and then actually had to go and check out if this was actually true or this is just something that Mike Mignola made up, because it's so out there. But Koshy the Deathless is basically a man whose body is separated from his soul, and so as long as his soul is alive, he cannot be destroyed. And he hides his soul inside of an egg, inside of a duck, inside of a rabbit, if I remember correctly, on a deserted island. It's weird, but he basically, Koshy can be destroyed, he can be chopped into pieces, and he's fine, like he can't die. Baba Yaga is basically the Russian boogeyman, and was the name that John Wick gets in the John Wick movies. But Baba Yaga herself is an old decrepit witch who rides around on a mortar and pestle, and her house has chicken legs, so just weird fucking stuff. And we get to see more of this insanity as this movie progresses. So eventually, Koma, he is called up by one of the provincial people. He wants Koma to give last rites to his daughter who is dying. And this daughter, of course, is the one that he beat half to death. She does end up dying, and her dad, kind of realizing there's some sort of connection there, asks basically forces him to stay and keep vigil over her for 3 nights. Now, Colma is no dummy, and he realizes that this is a witch, so he basically creates a protection circle around himself, and each night, the corpse awakens and tries to get to him, but he's able to survive each night, although little by little his courage starts to wane, and we get to see that as his hair literally turns gray. On the third night, when she awakens, this witch summons all the demons of hell, and we have this great sequence where all these demons come out in black and white, and it's people in makeup, it's people with really disturbing makeup at times, like there's like a Batman, not like Batman the superhero, but like Man Bat, I guess, technically. So it's like a man with bat wings and a face like a bat. There are like little people, demons. They are these people that are crawling out of the woodwork, and they are all kind of in service of this mega demon, V, who has all the demons rush Colma and end up killing him. And they only stop once, daybreak comes and you hear a crow sing. But Colma dies in all this. This movie is nuts, and I think it's just a great take on Russian folklore. And here, at least here in the U.S., Russian folklore isn't really talked about unless you're Russian, I would assume. Like, a lot of this stuff to me, when I first read it in Hellboy, was out there, and it's fascinating stuff. I mean, I really enjoy it. But, yeah, V is definitely a great movie and just a great thing to watch. So one of the things that's always been recurring throughout the time of movies in general and horror movies in particular is having haunted house movies. And one of the best haunted house movies came out in 1963, and that was Robert Wise's The Haunting. Robert Wise was this phenomenal director who did all, much like his contemporaries in the 50s and 60s and on, and the 70s, he would just kind of do whatever. He wasn't necessarily someone that was burned into a particular style. Robert Wise, when he was up for contention for an Academy Award for West Side Story, he worked on The Andromeda Strain. He worked on Star Trek The Motion Picture. This is a guy with a very much varied career. And he took all of his expertise and all of his powers as a director to bring us one of the best haunted house movies, The Haunting, in 1963, based on the Shirley Jackson novel, The Haunting of Hill House. And The Haunting of Hill House is actually a novel that's been redone plenty of times. I mean, there's the Vincent Price House on Haunted Hill. There's the remake of The Haunting from the 90s, which is utter shit. Don't bother watching it. There's the recent Netflix series from Mike Flanagan, The Haunting of Hill House. And The Haunting is great. It's this almost psychological horror movie wherein we aren't, the whole time it's like this creeping terror, and we're not really knowing if what's actually happening is supernatural or if there's some other thing that's causing everything to happen. We follow this group of characters, played by Julie Harris, Claire Bloom, Richard Johnson, and Russ Tamblyn, as they come into this house, into the Hill House, which has, it's been around for 90 years, and it has this history of hauntings, and we find out little by little that something's definitely wrong with this house. This movie is super interesting, and I think a lot of it really works as more psychological horror, and a lot of it's just this creeping terror of kind of what's going on. Like, some of the best things, like, there's a scene where Julie Harris is in a room, and you just hear, like, thumping, and you hear babies crying, and you hear just like these weird sounds, but there's nothing there, and she's talking to someone else in the room, and it's like just stay quiet, and she's holding someone's hand, and then the lights come on and she realizes that she's not holding anything. And you're kind of, for the longest time, it kind of plays this thing of, is this all just in their head? Are they just kind of giving into this idea that this place is haunted, and so they're just fucking with themselves, like they're psyching themselves out, or is there really something there? And by the end of it, we realize that yes, this is definitely haunted, and it turns out that Eleanor, Julie Harris's character, has been narrating the story the whole time, because she ends up as a ghost as well. But The Haunting, spoilers, I guess, The Haunting is great. It's another just great example of just a really well done haunted house movie. And I think one of the movies that kind of shows things to come, like something like Carnival of Souls, that has very much the same sort of vibe as The Haunting, where we're following someone who is already dead, unbeknownst to them in the particular case of Carnival of Souls, and much the same idea in this movie as well. As I was mentioning, you know, talking about V and talking about some other movies, international horror was coming back in a big way, and one of the countries that was really starting to kind of show that was Italy. And Italy gave us lots of great directors, but one of the first really seminal, really great horror directors out of Italy was Mario Bava, who was known as the godfather of Italian gore, which, if you're gonna have a if you're gonna have a title, like, that's pretty damn great, like master of Italian horror, the master of the macabre, like, these are great sort of names to have, right? But Mario Bava, he was a director whose films are mostly cult classics, and in the time probably weren't really that popular. And in a way, I think he's mostly known as for his work in as a cinematographer more so than a director. But his directing style and the movies that he did really ended up influencing not just Italian directors, people like Dario Argento and Lucio Fulci, but also American directors like John Carpenter and Martin Scorsese and Tim Burton and Joe Dante, Francis Ford Coppola, even contemporaries like Roger Corman, were influenced by Bava's work. And Bava just had like this fascination with like illusion and reality and how human nature can be destructive. And one of his directorial debut was Black Sunday from 1960, and Black Sunday is about this witch Ava, who in the 1600s is killed along who is killed along with her lover, who is a vampire, who's Cruvajan, if I remember correctly. That's his name, Cruvajan. They are killed. They're basically brought up on trials as witches. She is killed with a Satan mask, which is, I don't know if this is real or not, but it's like this mask with spikes on the inside that is driven in her face with a huge fucking mallet. And then she is buried with a cross over her, keeping her body from being able to be resurrected. But of course, you know, hundreds of years later, she is able to be resurrected accidentally, and she ends up influencing other people and calling back her vampire lover to regenerate herself. And Aza is played by Barbara Steele, who is like horror royalty. But on top of that, Aza also plays Katia Vajda, who is a princess in the time, in the modern day of the movie, and she starts to slowly but surely take over her body and is using her to regenerate herself to be able to do her witchy stuff and take over and get revenge on the people that harmed her. I think that this is just a great example of the kind of work that Mario Bava would do, and it's just a fun movie at the end of the day. I mean, come on, when you got witches, you got like witch trials, people's faces getting smashed in, you have vampires in this, how can you not love this? This is straight up horror, and it's insane. I mean, it's not maybe as insane as some of the Argento stuff later on, but definitely worth, definitely worthy, and definitely a great movie to check out. As I mentioned, though, the other thing that we really have starting in the 1960s is, like, this wave of independent movies. Like I had mentioned earlier, Carnival of Souls, that's an independent movie. Night of the Living Dead is an independent movie. And I mean independent in the sense that these were studio movies, but they weren't really regimented. That's not to say that they weren't all necessarily studio movies. That's just my way of kind of getting around to Herschel Gordon Lewis and Blood Feast. Blood Feast is marketed as one of the goriest movies of all time, and Herschel Gordon Lewis is basically known for being the godfather of gore here in America, and being the one that really sort of initiated or popularized the idea of having ridiculous gore in movies. Blood Feast revolves around this character, Fahd Ramses, who wants to resurrect the Egyptian goddess, I believe it's Isis, the Egyptian goddess Ishtar, and in does so by sacrificing women and by killing them. And these are all bloody murders. Like, he rips out someone's tongue and there's blood everywhere. He chops off someone's leg. He rips open someone's chest and takes out, like, their hearts. And I may be overselling this because this all looks fake as fucking shit, man. Like, it looks like paint everywhere. And when these look like props, they very much look like props. So there's a lot of kind of suspension of disbelief because this movie is so shittily done, but that honestly is part of the charm. And whenever you watch movies, like, even nowadays, there's movies with, like, really shitty effects, or you can tell there's budgetary constraints, so they're doing what they can with what they have. Fuck, man, The Evil Dead is one of my favorite movies, and you can literally see what they're doing, like, what the effects sometimes are. Like, it's like, oh, that's cream corn, you know, you can fucking tell. But it doesn't matter, because if you buy into the movie, you're into it, and that's what matters. And, you know, Blood Feast, I think, is important just in that it kind of showed that you can work outside of the studio system, you can kind of do your own thing, which, trust me, this is, like, almost the beginning of the explosion of exploitation movies later in the 60s and 70s. But also that you can kind of just go for broke and be as bloody as you can be. And every gory fucking movie after this has, in a way, owes a debt of gratitude to Blood Feast. So the 60s really were almost like this turning point where horror kind of grew up from the focus on teenagers in the 50s, but also started to kind of grow up in the sense that they're striving to do more with what they have, or they're trying to take on headier issues more directly, not so much like in the subtext, but sometimes literally in the text of what they're doing, or just taking on these interesting ways of doing things and continuing to do that in with more modern methods and things that we would recognize even to this day in movies. So the 60s, you know, are great. They have a lot of great movies when it comes to horror. So that's going to be it for today, and we'll be back tomorrow.